This would have been the modelling that was commissioned by the government fairly early on in this outbreak in Australia. So before we had significant cases, while we were seeing rapid rises in transmission in other countries. So at that point, the government really just needed some broad brush numbers to understand, as you said, if we do nothing, if we have a baseline response where we don't enact any specific measures, just how bad could this outbreak become for Australia? And what does that mean in terms of the impact to the health system and to the capacity that we have? So they used a relatively simple kind of broad brush disease model, plugging in data that was available at the time, which importantly wasn't from Australia because the disease hadn't really hit in that early stage. So we're looking at data that was coming out of Wuhan and other parts of China where the disease was much more advanced. And plugging that into models just to try and get a first approximation of how rapidly and across what fraction of the population the disease would ultimately spread. And as you said, those initial numbers were very scary, upwards of about 90% of the population, so over 20 million Australians potentially being infected. And even with good access to the health system, we know that there's a certain fraction of those inevitably require hospitalization, a certain fraction end up developing severe disease, and a certain fraction will inevitably die from that disease with or without good access to healthcare. And so when you run the maths on that, you come out with some very, very alarming numbers. So that was really a very important message just to put in front of government decision makers early on to say doing nothing is clearly not an option here. And we need a very strong and a very robust early response. And that inevitably, influenced our early decision making around the imposition of the social distancing measures, the restrictions on our borders, and the ramping up of testing and of case response.
And so did the modelling look at the scenarios with isolation measures, border controls? Has it looked at the scenarios now with those things in place?
Yeah, so in this initial modelling, they looked at three different scenarios. The first was where you don't impose any social distancing, but you do use the other sort of weapons that we have in our arsenal, which is when we detect cases, we isolate them. And we also quarantine the contact of those initial cases. So doing that alone, so isolation and quarantining, yielded a certain reduction in those numbers, according to the model. So instead of 90% of people being infected, that would take it down to an estimated 68%. Still under that scenario, you massively exceed the healthcare capacity of the country. Then they looked at two additional scenarios where, in addition to that, you layer on some social distancing measures. And again, it's broad brush stuff. So they were just basically applying a sort of blanket effectiveness of social distancing. So what would happen if the combination of all those measures reduced transmission by 25% and by 33%? So two very simple scenarios. What does that mean for cases and for healthcare capacity? And they brought the overall proportion of the population forecast to be infected down to 38% and 11%, respectively. So again, big message to the decision makers was that social distancing is likely to work and it needs to be enacted. Important to emphasize, this wasn't based on what we know now about the actual effectiveness of these social distancing measures in Australia. Again, this was looking elsewhere and just taking some approximations of what impact those types of measures will have and plugging them into the model. So in actual fact, these social distancing measures introduced early and adhered to well by the population of Australia have so far been incredibly effective at slowing that rate of transmission.
So how can we then, Professor Peter Gething, further slow the rate of transmission in Australia, get it close to zero? Is that possible?
I think if we keep doing what we're doing, and that's obviously important, there's lots of unknowns about how society as a whole will continue to adhere to these quite draconian measures that are in place. But I think if everyone carries on doing what they're doing and stays tight and doesn't, go out over Easter and start visiting friends and family and so on, and we can maintain what we're doing now for weeks or even months into the future, then I would be optimistic that we will see further slowing of those daily case numbers to the point where we have close to, or if not in fact, zero new cases per day. So in other words, we can reduce this transmission right down and completely suppress it. And then, of course, the really huge question becomes, what do we do next?
So the exit strategy.
Exactly. That suppression will only have occurred because of this very, very intense social distancing and all the other measures that are in place. What we don't know, and what no one really knows around the world yet, is what will happen once we take our foot off the pedal and, you know, attempt to return to some semblance of normality in our lives as we start to relax those measures that have been put in place.